This week on Out of the Air features Americano jazz trio Cento Trio, led by guitarist and composer Don Cento, discussing his debut album, Halfway to Mellowtown. Next, mixed media artist Amy Renazzulli discussing her upcoming July 2026 exhibit at the Depot. Our spotlight's on Chicago Street Theater's production of the musical Ride the Cyclone with its director.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome you back to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Chicago Street Theater. Their upcoming production in July running through August 2nd, and they're doing something kind of unique called musical Ride the Cyclone, and it's going to be running mostly weekends there. Music and lyrics by Jacob Raymond and Brooke Maxwell, and the director is with us, Michael Glorioso, who's been with us before, and music director is Caitlin Leonard-White. Welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight to tell us all about Ride the Cyclone.
Well, hello. It's great to be back with you guys. Yeah, Ride the Cyclone is really great. We're really excited about it. So basically, the story of it is it's kind of a dark comedy. This group of teenagers goes to a festival. There's a singing group, and they're being told they ride the cyclone, the roller coaster. And unfortunately, there's a horrible accident where they all lose their life. But they go to purgatory, where they are basically pitching to go back to the real world and become the, so it's like a reverse Cats almost. Mm-hmm. So instead of trying to go to the beyond for Cats, you're trying to get back to the life they once had before they had a tragic accident.
So only one gets chosen, correct?
Only one, and it has to be unanimous vote. So they all pitch their reason why they should go back, and the one goes back, and the rest just kind of have to decide who that is. So it has a lot of different stories about like what is a life lived, and although they are all teenagers, you know, at that age, a lot of kids are like, well, you know, it's I haven't done much. I haven't done these things. I haven't had time to establish myself. But some of them actually realize, like, I have the thing, and look back at the things they didn't appreciate when they were alive, like their family, their friends, the missed opportunities that they could have had, but don't necessarily miss because they're together. There's one character who she actually she does not have a head. She replaced her head with a dolly's head, and she doesn't even know who she is. So it's kind of one of those things of what's her life even been. Great show, great special effects, had a very big cult following in Canada. It was actually came from our friends of the North, and they came all the way to Chicago and were off Broadway for a little while. It never made a Broadway run, but really, really hit momentum online. And the music is out there for everyone, really enjoys, and has had kind of a second life in the community theater and regional theater realm. So we're excited to present it for the first time in the area.
wonderful because it explores such deep feelings. I mean, we all have who we are on the surface, but our deeper feelings sometimes don't get expressed. But that's what you see in this play.
Oh, yeah. And it has, like I said, it's a dark comedy. There's sort of very funny moments that are throughout it, but there also are very like touching moments that the characters get to have with each other, interactions and how they change their own mentality on how they view life while they're together in this purgatory area.
Have you already cast the show? I know in that case also, have you started rehearsal process? Because with a musical, a lot of times you need to start learning music a little earlier.
Yeah, we just started, have a wonderful cast from all over. It's a younger cast because of just the nature of the show. Everyone's over the age of 18, but I think our oldest cast member, I think, is 30. And they actually play Karnak, who is the mechanical fortune teller that comes to life to tell. It's basically in this purgatory area. And we're kind of setting the show in like a dilapidated warehouse where things go to kind of either be repaired or go to the trash yard. So it's kind of also a purgatory for all these items, too, that are kind of from their past and things like that, too. So it's kind of interesting to have these young actors that came back from college. And we had, I think, about over 50, 55 people audition for the show, and there's only 7 parts.
Wow.
So we were able to cast everyone, and we had 2 understudies that we also want for the show just in case something happens, because it is a longer show run that we are doing. And, we want to make sure people feel safe too, because, you know, vocally it's demanding and they're on stage the entire time. There'll be a short intermission between, but the show was originally written without an intermission, but we're putting one in just so that we have a little bit of time to rest, but we're very excited about the whole process and the people we have cast.
Well, talk about dates. Do you know, this is kind of like the end of your season for Chicago Street. Yeah. Do you know what's coming up? There's nothing on the website yet, or is it still yet to be determined, the shows that are coming up for the 2026-27 season?
It's still a secret, but we'll be having a announcement very, very soon. We're going to be doing our annual trivia night sometime in July or June to kind of announce the season. As you know, with rights, a lot of people understand you can't really talk about it until everything's paid for. So hopefully look at our website and look for that trivia night that we're going to have to kind of show our new season. We do also, along with Ride the Cyclone adult version, there is a teen version we're running too, which will be going on simultaneously. So information about that will be on the website as soon as that gets cast and going too. So two cyclones for the price of one.
Wow. And 2 casts and more work for the director. Well, in our final moments here, tell us, first of all, dates, website, how to get tickets and such.
Of course, the dates are, we open Friday, July 10th, and we run through August 2nd. You can go right to our website at www.chicagostreet.org and just go click on buy tickets now. Tickets are going to be going fast, we predict, so you probably want to get them sooner rather than later. Don't want to miss out.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art on the Air Spotlight. Michael Glorioso, director of the upcoming show at the theater Ride the Cyclone. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you both so very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, with end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation. Emberforge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, everyone. This is recording artist David Arkenstone, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Don Santo to Art on the Air. Don has been making music since 1985, earning a BA in jazz guitar performance in 1995. He produces and mixes recordings, composes instrumental pieces as a singer-songwriter, plus arranges music. He has played with many bands and artists and has contributed to over 70 albums and is a member of the instrumental rock group Shibboleth and the trio Cento Trio plus El Cento. Since 2018, he has been busy producing, recording, and mixing in his studio in Austin, Texas. Halfway to Mellow Town is the debut album from Cento Trio, which will be available June 19th, 2026. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Don. It's very nice meeting you.
Aloha. Wow, it's very nice to meet you as well. Thank you for that introduction.
Great to have you on, and glad we came across you. I think Howard was the one who referred us to you. But anyway, we'd like to hear your origin story, and how I like to tee that up is like saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Don.
The origin story, my superhero origin story. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, I started out not too, just kind of right around the corner from you all. I was born in Pontiac, Michigan. And then my family moved to Missouri in 1980. So I was in third grade. My dad is from St. Louis. My mom was from a tiny little town called Hayti, Missouri. And I grew up in another tiny little town called Sykeston, Missouri, which is surrounded by farmland, if you can, about a few miles from the Mississippi River. So close there in the swamps, kind of in the humidity down by the river. And, you know, music wasn't really in the house. My parents had some records and listened to some records, but it wasn't a huge part of my home life. But somewhere around sixth grade, I had a really great music teacher that I connected with, and he brought in synthesizers and all kinds of cool instruments, and he was in a cover band, and he was just a fascinating character. So I bought a synthesizer off of him and tinkered around with that, and I think I was more interested in making silly sounds than making songs at that point. I remember I was always trying to make a helicopter sound.
Oh, I was just wondering, you know, I was thinking about outdoor sounds and the swamp. The swamp makes so many beautiful sounds. So were you, you know,
yeah,
were you
it was
a lot. The swamp in June is especially wonderful, I think.
Yeah, I guess we did spend a lot. It's most of it's a drained swamp in that area, actually. But I have spent time in the swamps of Mississippi, and you can hear the frogs and the wind and the giant pine trees, which is amazing. You know, Sykeston, Missouri, Iowa, remember. The sound of the cicadas was kind of prevalent a lot. And if you get out in the country, you could hear frogs chirping. And it didn't take much to get out in the country. You know, you just drive half a mile. And, you know, I grew up across railroad tracks from a cotton field. So there was a lot of farmland around. And a lot of those just sort of Midwestern plains sounds. Thunderstorms were a big part, you know, because it's sort of like I have in Texas now. A big open vista, so you could see storms rolling in from miles away and just experience the thunder and the way the smell and the air changes. I've always resonated with that.
Yeah, completely. For me, the wind, you know, it's really very vocal.
Yeah, so growing up in that, you know, there was, I guess, sound was a big part. Music was kind of floating around. And then I graduated sixth grade. And then in seventh, maybe we started band in sixth or seventh grade. I don't remember, but I ended up playing French horn. I'd wanted to play cello, but I guess I tested well on the musical proficiency exam, and the band director insisted that I play French horn because supposedly that was a difficult instrument. So turns out he was right because I was not very good. I was not the best. I was not the worst. I was sort of mediocre, which put me right in the middle. A little of the front row, which is where the French horn sat. So one day in seventh grade, we're in band class, and this is where my origin story actually begins. We're in band class, but we don't have band class. There's a guest artist. And again, I'm sitting directly in front of the podium, maybe 4 feet, 6 feet away. And the guest artist is a flamenco guitar player named Ronald Radford. I didn't know anything about flamenco guitar. I didn't know Ronald Radford, knew nothing. He apparently, as a youngster, had studied with Segovia and Spain and was, you know, toured around the States doing clinics, things like that. So he played, and it was like a lightning bolt to my brain. I'd never seen anything like it. I was just completely floored, completely instantly changed. And I don't know if it was the rhythmic excitement or just the proximity to it, or the sound of the guitar, or what it was exactly, but I went home that day after school and sort of, I didn't really ask my parents if they would take me to his concert that night. I sort of told them that's what we're doing.
Man did.
And they were, yeah, they were benevolent enough, and they took it. They took me to the concert in Dexter, Missouri, in a high school gymnasium, and it was amazing. I bought his tape. I shook his hand. I had him autograph his tape. I still have it somewhere. And that just kind of set me on the path. I think I started saving money after that for a guitar, which the music teacher that I mentioned earlier helped me pick out at Keys Music in Cape Girardeau. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I got that guitar eventually. And then it's kind of been every day since then. I've been playing guitar.
Did you play flamenco at all?
That's the funny story. No, I've never figured out flamenco. I never pursued that after that. It's, I guess it requires a technical facility that I just don't have. Some sort of supercharged finger dexterity. I mean, I have good dexterity, but I don't have the powerful right hand. I haven't put in the time for whatever reason, but it's just sort of there at the base, at the very bottom layer of the stack of pancakes, which is my musical life.
Well, we want to talk about your current album, which is the Halfway to Mellowtown, and this is with a group called Cento Trio, is I guess what you pronounce it. They kind of all run together, and yep. Maybe we'll cue up the first thing. It Takes What It Takes. Tell us about that, and we'll take a listen to it.
Yeah, Cento Trio, just because I didn't like to call it, I didn't want to call it the Don Cento Trio. It Takes What It Takes is a song that I wrote. I've in another life, I'm a singer-songwriter, but this was a song that started out as a vocal song. Didn't really have lyrics for it, just kind of was scatting a melody, had some placeholder words, including It Takes What It Takes. But I kind of liked it, so I brought it to the trio. We started playing it, and it fit right in, just kind of with the sound that was starting to develop. So this is a sort of a jazz song with a sort of a pop song structure.
Well, let's take a listen to it. It's It Takes What It Takes.
halfway to Mellotone album, and it's one of the cuts on it called It Takes What It Takes with our guest today.
You know, Don, to me, it has like an extremely tropical feel, and it is asking for words eventually, so maybe.
Yeah, I probably owe it to myself to finish it. You know, sometimes, you know, I guess all musicians can be a little lazy, but yeah, I think I just got a little lazy with that one. I was really satisfied with the way the band plays it, so I owe it to myself and to you to finish that someday.
What about this tropical feel that I really felt like, I don't know. I don't know. What am I hearing that's so tropical?
I don't know. It is funny. There's so much that happens in music and arrangement that is either conscious or unconscious. And with this band, I really was consciously trying to be unconscious about some of it. You know, I definitely have ideas about the way songs should flow. But I don't recall giving these guys, the drummer Norm Bergeron and the bass player Phil Spencer, I don't recall giving them really any specific instruction in terms of feel or approach, you know.
No aloha shirts that day.
No, but I hadn't thought about it as tropical, but I think I hear what you're saying. And it might be just the fact that Norm, the drummer, is a tremendous hand percussionist. He's studied in Cuba. He's studied in Africa. So he's certainly bringing his background to the song, and he has just such a strong, you know, I guess it's not really tropical, but it would be equatorial percussion kind of background.
Sure. Yeah. It kept reminding me of my Arthur Lyman albums for some reason. And while it didn't have the vibes in it, I don't know. I just was transported there, I guess.
Hey, that's great. Arthur Lyman. I will have to look that up. That's a name that doesn't ring any bells with me.
Oh, yeah.
What period was Arthur?
40s, okay. 50s. Yeah. But he was playing up until the 80s and 90s, still in Hawaii. Awesome. So, yeah.
I will look that up.
Well, we're curious, too, about, and then we'll listen to another cut from the current album, but just briefly tell us about some of the other musical endeavors that you're on.
Well, I think the other one that you mentioned in the intro is a band called Shibboleth, which is another instrumental group I've had or been a part of for, I think we started playing in 1999. And that, primarily the composer in that is my good friend Richard Martin, who's an incredible composer, incredible piano and keyboard player. Richard was introduced to me by the bass player and another old friend of mine named James Driscoll. And we just hit it off, started making our weird little brand of post-surf rock, whatever it is, silly, goofy, fun instrumental music. I think I always like to say that it's Shibboleth is sort of the only members of the conversation that aren't in on the joke. You know, we take the music seriously, but not ourselves. We take the music seriously, but we also kind of treat it silly. Sillily. Is that a word?
Sillily.
Sillily, yeah. So Shibboleth is still active. We have two records out. We play a couple of shows maybe once every year and a half, something like that. But Richard just moved down here to Austin, so he and I have been playing together a little bit more. So maybe maybe something will percolate up in the Shibboleth waters here in the near future.
With all your trios, are you the only singer in them? And I really wish you would sing more on a lot of those tracks.
Well, thank you. Yeah, El Cento is the only vocal band that I've ever done, and that was another trio, and that was just consciously a vocal project. Shibboleth is consciously instrumental, and I guess so is Cento Trio, but I have been part of a little songwriting group here lately, and which has gotten me writing vocal songs again, so, and some of those I've liked, so perhaps I will. And I guess I owe it to you again. I'll make you a record.
Well, we want to quickly get to your next song. Was it Gorringers from Halfway to Mellotone? Just about that, and we'll take a quick look to that.
Yep, that's pronounced Gorringers. I have a habit of joining bands and starting bands and naming tight songs with names that are just unpronounceable. And that was written around the time the Texas Rangers were winning their one and only World Series title. And my wife is a huge Rangers fan. So I just sort of dedicated that title to her. It's Go Rangers, but with an apostrophe in the wrong place. And that was just an instrumental song that just kind of happened. It just kind of came together. It happened really fast. It's a pretty simple melody, but the thing that I like about that is I did spend time trying to arrange the structure in an interesting way so that the guitar solo is over a different type of material than the bass solo is over. So each of the little sections has a distinct structural element to it, which keeps it interesting for, hopefully for me, as a, us as players, and hopefully for the listeners.
Okay, Groingers from Halfway to Melantown, Dobsento. From Halfway to Melantown, Groingers and Cento 3-0. And in our final moments here, I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us about how people can find you, your music, from all your musical endeavors.
Well, the best way is probably the old internet. Cento3o.com, C-E-N-T-O threeo.com. That's got links to everything, Instagram, our YouTube, Bandcamp. They can pre-order the vinyl or CD or digital there. It'll be on Spotify, it'll be on Apple Music and all the streaming platforms. It's available June 19th, the full length. There's one song out right now. There's another song coming out June 5th, It Takes What It Takes, which your listeners just heard. So yeah, cento30.com will take you wherever you need to go.
Great. And if you click on his picture on our website, it'll take you to that website too. You know, I appreciate you coming on the show, sharing Halfway to Mellowtown, your first album release with cento30. It's Don Cento, and take a listen to his music, and you can find it on Spotify and everything else. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a total pleasure. Thank you.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Meg Barrow of the Beverly Shores Depot Museum and Art Gallery. I'm the curator. You're listening to Art on the Air, Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Amy Renzulli to Art on the Air. Amy grew up in a family of artists who also had strong business sensibilities. She has multiple disciplines, painting, drawing, writing, music, and community building. She had two successful School of Rock locations, two art studios, and many projects brewing. She recently moved to Southwest Michigan. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Amy. Very nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Well, Amy, we'll get to your upcoming exhibit later on, but like we do on Art in the Air, we like to know your origin story. And I set it up how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Amy.
Oh, wow. So I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, and this is a story I love to tell because it really shaped who I am today. My parents moved into the city during the white flight, which as a child I thought it was about white people wanting new houses in suburbs, and my parents really disliked this beautiful old stone Victorian house we grew up in. But later I learned it was a little bit more sinister, or there was definitely a very negative side to that. And I have two sisters. We went to public schools. And I'm the oldest. Up until sixth grade, we were in the minority in our classes. So we might be like a handful of white kids in every class. And then it was just a mostly black and brown school. And I loved it. I had a great education. I loved my teachers. I loved the principals we had. I still remember them. But around when I was going into seventh grade, which is middle school, we called it junior high back then. They started busing and desegregation. So my sisters and I, the bus stopped at the corner where our house was. And on rainy days, everybody would gather on our porch and we would ride out to the suburbs to our new school. And, people were astounded. Like, what do you do? Why are you on that bus? Like they couldn't make sense of it. One of my sisters reminded me that there were parents protesting the first day that we arrived. But overall, my entire childhood has been, I grew up in a really very integrated environment, and I feel blessed for that. And I still keep in touch with a man who was a boy that I met. I remember meeting him the very first day of kindergarten, and I remember where he was standing. I remember his smile, and we interact on Facebook like several times a week. Most of my friends from that era, black or white, we share the same values because we grew up together for the most part. And it shaped who I am, and it's the reason we live in Oak Park. And it's the reason that we, it's the reason that I made it a mantra for the School of Rock in Oak Park to reflect the community that we're in, because I did not want to open a country club only for rich people. So, and then on the art side, my father was a physician, and he, in his 40s, he quit his medical practice to become an artist. My mom had just graduated from law school, and so I had the art side, and I had kind of the business risk aversion side with my mom, and that really created an entrepreneur. All three of us are entrepreneurs. My one sister has her own medical practice, a direct primary care medical practice in Delaware, and my other sister is a very talented and very accomplished fiber artist, and kind of a leader in her field. So we all went off and built our own businesses.
Very good.
So what was schooling like? Was it art enriched during the time you were there?
It was public school. You know, it was just public school. We had music, we had art. I remember in middle school, it was either middle school or high school. I don't remember which, but there was a showcase in the hallway where this boy who was a couple years older than me had the whole showcase of all of his artwork. And I remember thinking, I want to have that showcase. Like, I want to be in there one day. I was about 2 years behind him. And I was at when I was old, a couple years older. Yeah.
Oh, no, I read that your father was a landscape painter. And so when I looked on your website and saw the pastels of landscape, I thought, what type of landscapes did he do that you were viewing?
Yeah, so I started, kind of joke, I sort of picked up a paintbrush again as an adult. We bought a home in Long Beach, Indiana, and as you guys probably know, there's lots of rocks there. And so I started painting rocks and painting landscapes on rocks. And then that led to painting on paper. And then that led to, as I asked my dad if I could copy his work, because I just wanted to practice. I didn't know what to do. So of course he said yes. And I also started doing pastels on top of these clay prints that my dad was doing, clay monotype prints that he did on a fabric interface material. You can picture that stuff that goes in to make like curtains stiffer, like,
or pelham.
Yes. Yeah. So he would print on that with clay, and then he had so much of it that he would send me his extras, and then I would paint landscapes on there. And that was like interesting, because it's kind of like, well, I'm going to make an analogy. It took me a long time to learn how to ride a two-wheel bike. And we were on vacation in Cape May, New Jersey, and I was about 10. And we rented bikes one day, and I was on the back of a tandem bike. My dad was on the front. And I felt so cool because I was riding a two-wheeler. And I think that's the same thing with painting. I was on the back of his tandem bike for a little while until I took the training wheels off and then just started going for it.
You know, I want to explore about the School of Rock, and then we'll get back to your actual art. You touched on it a little bit, but tell us about what that was about. Like, how you came to say create that. You did a little bit, but maybe expand on that a little bit. But what the School of Rock is, and unfortunately, I think you just sold that. So, but anyway, tell us about the how you got in and what you did.
Yes. I'm very proud of the sale too, because two of my employees who started the very first day we opened and who themselves have been best friends since fifth grade, they're now in their 40s, they each bought a school, and I don't know, it's a great source of pride for me that they were able to learn enough and grow enough and save enough to do that. But
and also that you grew a business that they wanted to, that it was doing well enough that they wanted to purchase it and keep it going.
Yeah, right. It's just, I mean, I want them to have what I have, and I would like everybody to have what I have, but I don't know. It just was a great handoff. But the way about 15 years ago, my daughter was around 11 or 12, and she just came crying to us for music about how she needs music and she has to have music and there's no music in the house and we don't understand. And she's crying. And I said, well, Abigail, this is why I work, so that we can, you know, give you the opportunities to try whatever you want to try. And so I Googled rock camp, and she went to a week-long summer camp at the School of Rock in Chicago. At the end of that week, they put on a show at the Comedy Sports Club on Belmont Avenue. And I was the mom in the front row, just like blown away. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. She's playing the bass, and this other little girl's playing the guitar. And then they're all, the whole band was filled in with their older show team kids. So it did sound really good, but I could see the potential, and it just lit a fire in me. And I decided to investigate about, you know, what I said was to the woman at the front desk, I said, you should open a School of Rock in Oak Park. It would do really well. And she said, well, you should, because it's a franchise. And my immediate reaction, I probably came from my mom in my head. She did say something funny about it. It was, no way. I have no desire to open a franchise. But I did investigate. That feeling lasted 30 seconds. And then I realized it was something I wanted to go for. And I was working at Blue Cross. My husband also worked there, and he was incredibly supportive, not afraid of taking this big leap and big risk. And we bought a building. We opened the school. It's an after-school performance program. Everybody plays music together. We teach adults. We've had multiple wonderful bands come out of our program, both kids and adults. And it would make me sad when the adults left, but really they left because they're out gigging and doing shows on their own. So it's always a good thing. And then for a long time, many years, we were the largest in the world. There were, at the time when we were at the top, there were 350 schools all over the world. And now we're around in the top five. So I'm still proud of that. And that's because it's just, we're right by public transportation. We're right by the Green Line from Chicago, so musicians can get back and forth. We're in a community that really values the arts. We have a very wide socioeconomic collection of people in Oak Park. So that kind of goes back to just, it had to be a place that whoever walks in the door would see somebody that looks like them.
Wow.
In whatever that is. You know,
sure.
It could be age, could be skin color, could be identity, any of it. And that's basically what I focused on.
One quick question before we get back to your art. Mm-hmm. Do you do any music yourself?
Well, I'm not a musician, but I like to sing. Did our adult program for years. I was one of the people who started a band with some of the adult students, and we did that for a few years. But really, art, painting, and making art was just, it just pulled me. It pulled me out of that, pretty much out of everything. And this is where my passion is. I like to sing. I love to harmonize. I love the joy of harmonizing with other people. And I still do it for fun, but I really just want to paint.
Singers are musicians. I mean, they really are. So you don't have to discount that.
Yeah.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
So moving on to your art, and we'll talk about how you linked up with the Depot for your upcoming exhibit, which we'll talk about later. Tell us about some of the subjects you like. Now, obviously, on a radio show, we can't show that, but we can refer people to your website. But tell us about, and how that's evolved over time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how I moved from landscapes to what I do now. I'd really have to sit down and kind of try to go through my memory to figure out that transition. But somewhere along the line, I discovered jelly plate printing, which is a really cool and very accessible thing that I would love to teach people. But so I print all my own papers. I use tissue paper. I use tea bag paper, which is amazing because it's translucent and it doesn't tear when it gets all wet and covered with paint. And all of my paintings that are going to be at the depot are all basically painted with those papers. So it's like layers and layers and layers of collage. And I have learned that the worse a painting gets, the better it will end up at the end. And my favorite things to paint on are previous paintings or bad paintings, or because to me, it's easier than starting on a blank canvas. But right now, and for the depot, I'm doing some like foresty trees and birds, and then some sort of beach inspired things. I like to use vintage photos of women doing joyful, powerful things, you know, like high diving or water skiing, things like that. And I always say, I can't draw. So I think I'm, and that's been my whole life. I've always been more of a designer. So I would say I kind of design my paintings to accommodate my lack of ability to draw.
You know what they remind me of, Amy? Yeah. They remind me of the quilts that I did in like the 70s. You know, they just have that very patchwork. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what type of fiber does your sister do?
Oh, well, I just want to go back to the quilts for a second.
Yeah.
Because my grandmother was a quilter and my sister. And there's a woman who has a studio at the Box Factory in St. Joseph, Michigan. And her name is Tisha. And she has, her quilts look like my painting. So we keep saying we need to do something together.
Most definitely.
Yeah. But wait, what was your question again?
Oh, I was just wondering but you answered it with your grandmother. I thought maybe the fiber reference was from your sister.
Yeah. My sister is a needle felting artist who really grew her business on YouTube. And even like she's very, when I go to art retreats and I introduce myself, and if I mention my sister, the other women there who are from all over the place know who she is if they know fiber arts. But most recently, she got asked to do a life-size sheep for the Sheep Detective movie that Hugh Jackman stars in. So she's wouldn't say like her art inspires me, but we definitely encourage each other, support each other, give each other feedback and help each other creatively. And I think we all just have our own different mediums.
Do you teach at all? Do you have any opportunities that you share your techniques?
Not yet, but pretty much every time I paint, and especially if I discover something really cool, I'll give you an example. Well, let me finish the sentence and then I'll give you an example. I just want to share it. Like in my head, while I'm doing it, I'm imagining myself teaching somebody this thing that I discovered. And so with the new studio in the barn that we built in South Haven, I want to do workshops. It's not going to be a public place where it's like open all the time, drop in classes, teaching kids. It's not going to be that. It will be a few times a year, either I'm teaching or a visiting artist comes, because really I want to mostly paint, but I want to teach because I want to share what I've learned and what I know. And I want to bring the joy of making art to other people. The example that I was going to give you is one day I was rolling paint out on this jelly plate, and you put paper down on top of it, and you can do all kinds of things. You can use stencils, you can do image transfers, but I was just using paint and I put tissue paper down, and it had like all the wrinkles that you would imagine when, you know, tissue paper is very flimsy. And so the tissue paper became like the tree lines and the branches when I adhered it to a painting, because there were all these lines that kind of looked like nature. So
mm-hmm. reaching toward the sky.
Mm-hmm. So your color palette, does that vary from item, or is it just something like, okay, I'm going to do this time, and you know, how do you approach that?
It's neon pink and neon green.
I try to, you know, sometimes I get caught in my head about painting what I think other people want. You know, oh, I should do more neutrals, or I should do just two colors, and I just can't, and it's not what I want to do. And then, but the pieces I do keep selling, so I think just even very, very recently learned, like, I just have to paint for myself. And that includes color and composition and subject matter. And hopefully people will like it. And, but I can't just do something because somebody else wants that, or I perceive that somebody wants something differently. So my colors are really bright and vivid, happy. And they tend to be very similar from painting to painting.
Seems like a lot of your work is large. Do you also, because it seems like it needs that space to breathe a bit, but do you also use that technique on a smaller canvas?
I do. I much prefer to paint large, and I'm actually working on a very large commission that's 7 feet tall by 5 feet wide right now. And I had done these mock-ups of where I took previous paintings and I tried to enlarge them and show the customer what it would look like. And so the one I'm doing is actually based on a very small painting, and it's really hard to get it right. So I'm on the struggle bus with that one, but I know I'll get it. I'm just not there yet. It's hard to translate a technique that you use on not all techniques, but that you use on a small painting to something much, much larger. I like painting large.
It sounds like you've really concentrated in moving into doing your art all the time, but is there something you have not done, whether it be in art or otherwise, that you want to do? Like if there's some other type of art that you'd like to explore?
That's a really good question. I used to make jewelry, and I had tons and tons of like gemstone beads and chain and all kinds of findings, and I got rid of all of that, but I still have a stash, and I'd kind of like to get back to that. I'm looking forward to bringing in other artists who have different styles and techniques to teach so that I can also learn. But I can't think of anything specific that I want to do. I'm just in such a state of transition right now. I can barely see straight.
What do you like to do outside of art?
I enjoy cooking. I enjoy time with my family. I have two kids in their mid to late 20s, and I enjoy time with them. I like to do Pilates, and I haven't done much of that lately, so I'd like to get back to that. Socializing.
I think there's probably a lot with just the transition to Michigan.
There's a lot. I mean, I've in the past month, I've had to sell two, not had, I sold two businesses, moved two kids' locations, opened the barn, and it's just nonstop. And I feel like a crazy woman, like who's constantly making excuses for myself, but it really is, it's been massively busy lately. So
wow,
I'm just starting to see the light.
Well, we're almost ready to wrap up. We're going to get you an opportunity to talk about your show at the Depot. I was going to ask you how you got connected, but we don't have time for that. So tell us when it is, the opening reception, how long it runs, and it's called From the Dunes to the Tree. So tell us real briefly about that.
Okay. The opening is on July 10th from 5 to 7. I hope people will show up for the opening reception. It runs for a month through
August 8th.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And it's going to feature both kind of trees, nature, and beach things, and hopefully really strike a chord with especially the people who live in Beverly Shores, because it's kind of modeled after their
where they live,
their neighborhood, their lifestyle. Yeah.
Website. Do you have one?
It's not up to date, but it's amyrenzuliart.com.
Okay, and we'll put a link on your picture on our website. Our guest today was Amy Renzulli, and you can find her exhibit at the Depot in Beverly Shores, From the Dunes to the Tree, opening July 10th, 5 to 7, and it'll end August, 9th. Amy, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your arts journey.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Amy.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.